This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.
It is 7:45. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning. Anthony Reich, how are you?
Okay, Tov. There was a lot of attention paid to the movie, the documentary movie that won an Oscar the other day, which followed the lives of a family of Palestinians and was effectively a movie protesting against Israeli rule over areas of Judea and Samaria. And of course, the producers were a group that involved both Israeli Arabs as well as Jewish Israelis. And it was interesting that the one of the producers, Yuval Avraham, who's a Jewish Israeli, was involved in putting the movie together, did actually make mention of releasing the hostages when he took acceptance speech in front of all of the celebrities at the Oscars award. But it was interesting that it was obvious, at least to me, when he was making these statements, that they really needed to say what the audience wanted to hear. And what the audience wants to hear, even after all this time and even after so much information has become publicly known, is that there is somehow a plan to create a Palestinian state, rather than talking about hostages and about the attack that was carried against Israel. It just is amazing how, even after all this time, people kind of seem to have not taken notice of or sort of forgotten where this particular part of the story began. I don't know what others felt about that, and whether there was a similar feeling from other people who heard the speeches.
I think that is definitely, seems to have been the feeling around it, that my feeling watching this part of it was, they are so scripted, Hollywood. So somebody says something and they know they've got to cheer to that, even if it was just vile. But the point is that it was down to 18 million people watching it. You know, I know people who get more, you know, more interaction than that on Twitter on a normal day. So I'm not sure how much anybody really cares anymore, aside from those who are invested in it.
Unfortunately, I feel not only let down by the movie and the timing. I mean, you know, I'm not suggesting for a moment that many of the aspects of what was presented in the movie, which I haven't seen, I'm not suggesting that there's any falsehoods in either way or lies have been told. But there is a time and a place for everything, and there is a background and the context. And I'm not sure that right now was the time or the place for a movie like that. I just think, while it might send, you know, important messages in an appropriate time, right now we really need to be focused on getting the hostages home.
That is absolutely right. I don't think that is in dispute. Let's talk about the fact that the Arab countries met yesterday in Egypt to formulate an alternative Gaza plan. Was any conclusion reached?
Well, there was kind of a formal announcement that was made by Egyptian President al-Sisi about what the Arab League, I mean, I don't know if it was really a formal meeting of the Arab League or not, but there was certainly a cast of characters in attendance in Egypt, including the new Syrian president and including Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian Authority president, and even including the United Nations Secretary General, Antonio Guterres. So there was quite a cast of characters all gathering yesterday in Cairo. And one of the key messages that came out of the meeting was that the Trump Gaza Riviera plan was really rejected in every possible way. And it's interesting that the Egyptian plan seemed to have been quite thought through. And what the Egyptian president said, of course, he spoke about reconstructing Gaza, and he spoke about the need for the Palestinians to have their own state. All of that we would have expected to hear in any event. But according to the plan, an administrative committee of what they call independent professional Palestinian technocrats, if that is all achievable in one go, then great. But it's supposed to be independent and
Right.
professional and Palestinian technocrats would effectively govern Gaza temporarily in preparation for a return to power by the Palestinian Authority. That is the main crux of the, let's say, the political angle of this plan, which of course in the background will involve many billions of dollars coming in order to reconstruct, and plans about where people will be housed while this reconstruction is going on. There was a statement that was the Israeli response to this was that the plan continues to rely on the Palestinian Authority and UNRWA, and doesn't really address the whole issue of terrorism and how to avoid terrorism again taking hold in Gaza. That is just one of the main areas that has not really been addressed in any of this plan. So the main issue for me is, well, there are two main issues. The first of which is this notion that the Palestinian Authority can potentially take control over Gaza, when, to be honest, right now, they're struggling to take control over the Palestinian Authority area in Judea and Samaria, the area that they've been designated to effectively govern over. They are struggling to keep hold of that. And it is, we see evidence of that from Israel's recent military activities in that area, where there's been massive IDF operations to clean out vast swathes of the Palestinian Authority area, including areas of Jenin and Tul Karim and other areas which are under the governorship of the Palestinian Authority. And Israel is finding massive amounts of terrorist activity, terrorist infrastructure in these areas. Now, if that's what we're signing up for, and if that's what we think that will be the solution in Gaza, then I think that we are misleading ourselves, because I can't see a different path for Gaza under the Palestinian Authority, when right now, even within the Palestinian Authority area, there is so much terrorism and so much infrastructure that's been built. Not only under the noses of the Palestinian Authority, but one would argue with the support of the Palestinian Authority due to the amount of money that they've been giving to families of terrorists, people who've been arrested by Israel. There's huge amounts of money that's flowing into that area, and therefore is effectively funding terrorism. So this idea that has been put forward by the Arab League, the meeting in Cairo, has significant holes in it. And the question is, you know, it's very, very easy for us to come up and be critical of whatever other people are suggesting. But the real question is, so what is the answer? And unfortunately, there aren't too many straightforward, obvious solutions that will somehow manage to keep terrorism out of Gaza. That's the reality of the story.
Very, it's very perplexing, because it's all very well to remove Hamas for now, but what then? And the fact that there doesn't seem to be a logical answer is very, very problematic. In spite of the ceasefire that continues to hold, the IDF has been active in eliminating key Hamas and Hezbollah leaders. So what are their latest activities?
So there were two really major activities that took place over the last few days. The first of which that is that the IDF reported that yesterday it killed a Hezbollah naval commander who was in southern Lebanon. Now, just to bear in mind that in Lebanon we officially have a ceasefire, and according to the details of that ceasefire, while the IDF still continued to be stationed in five critical areas in that southern Lebanon region, which has been approved by the United States after the date for which the IDF soldiers were due to have withdrawn completely came and went. And then it was extended, and now the United States has effectively approved the idea of the IDF remaining in a few critical parts. I think there's five critical places within the southern Lebanon area. So there are still IDF troops available and on the ground in the southern Lebanon area. And now they've actually carried out this killing of a senior Hezbollah naval commander. Apparently, it was a drone strike near the city of Tyre that killed the commander of Hezbollah's naval forces from its elite Radwan unit. And in addition to that, the IDF was active yesterday in the West Bank city of Jenin. And in that area, a top Hamas leader was killed. And there continue to be escalations in the area of Jenin, and as I've mentioned elsewhere around the West Bank area, with IDF soldiers very, very active in order to take out critical people and to destroy infrastructure. So even though we think that for all intents and purposes the war is over, it really isn't over. There is still a war being waged, particularly in the Judea and Samaria area right now. That's probably the place where there is most IDF activity to clean out those areas under the smoke, let's say, while the dust is settling on the war in general. It's given the IDF an opportunity to go in and really take some action within Judea and Samaria, within the Palestinian Authority area, to clean out there, but also within Lebanon. There have been some instances of IDF activity even in Gaza, where individuals have been killed and infrastructure has been destroyed under the umbrella of the ceasefire arrangement.
The IDF report since October 7th disaster has discussed this Hannibal directive. Now, I've been, you know, anybody who's an Israel hater sends me stuff on the Hannibal directive, which I haven't really engaged in. What is this?
I think it's a very, very interesting concept that the IDF apparently has adopted. But even before we talk about the Hannibal Directive, what I do want to say is that that as part of the report, information, detailed information has come out about some of the heroism of some of our soldiers. And this morning we read about the heroism of three individual soldiers who effectively mounted a last stand at Nahal Oz and managed to hold dozens of terrorists at bay for almost an hour until all three of them were finally killed. And even though it brings little comfort to their families, because of course they have lost a loved one in that war, but the activities and the heroism of these soldiers is just undeniable. And it's amazing that people are so dedicated and willing to put their lives on the line in order to protect fellow soldiers and in order to protect our country. And I think it does give a little comfort to their families to know exactly how heroic they really were. But just back to the whole issue of the Hannibal Directive. So this is the highly controversial story that the IDF apparently has this doctrine, which they said has been already in force and implemented in some way, shape, or form within the IDF since the 1980s. And the doctrine says, don't allow people to be kidnapped into Arab territories under any circumstances and at any price, which means effectively that all holds are released, everything, in order to prevent the kidnapping of particularly IDF soldiers, but of course now we're also talking about civilians, into Arab territories. And this was something that was identified back in the 1980s as being an extreme weakness that we potentially have, and that could be leveraged to our detriment by our enemies if we allow them to kidnap live or even dead soldiers and civilians into their territories. And the Hannibal Directive says you could even fire on the hostages themselves if necessary, and you could even have collateral damage, and you could do things which in general the IDF does not allow, their soldiers to partake in. There are certain rules of engagement, very strict rules of engagement, but apparently the Hannibal Directive removes all of those rules of engagement and says, under any circumstances and whatever you want to do, even if it means killing some of our own people, even if it means killing those hostages, don't allow them to be kidnapped into enemy territory. And this directive is now being re-examined, not only in light of what we've suffered as a result of our hostages, which has been a very, very heavy price, but also in light of its failure to prevent exactly what it was designed to prevent, which is to prevent hostages from being taken live or dead. There are reports that, for example, when Hadar Goldin was kidnapped and ultimately killed and taken to Gaza, that the Hannibal Directive was implemented. What do listeners think? Are we justified in removing all rules of engagement in order to prevent this? And what do we do now that we've seen that it's not as effective as we thought it may be?
I'd love to hear from you. 0618951019. It's 8:01. Thank you as always, Anthony Reich. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. If you have dreamed of owning a property in Israel, close to the sea or close to the center of Tel Aviv, now is your chance to make it a reality. The Blue Agency is happy to announce that they are in South Africa to discuss new property opportunities in Israel. For a private meeting with Barry Cohen to discuss your Israeli property or any Israeli property needs, WhatsApp him on 076-577-2000. That's 076-577-2000. The Blue Agency, your Israeli property, is in good hands.